Welcome to Heart, Hustle, and Humor, a show for dedicated, hardworking, fun entrepreneurs and business owners who want to build a business bigger than their own satisfaction. We all know heart got you started, hustle made it happen, and humor got you through it. This is the only place you can get inspired and motivated by my guests who are using the trifecta of heart, hustle, and humor in their business. It's time to dream higher. Today's episode is brought to you by Kaleidoscope Media Services. Kaleidoscope Media Services helps professionals scale their business by adding digital products for success. I'm your host, Dr. T. Welcome to another episode of Heart, Hustle, and Humor. Today, our guest is Chris Dyer. And I am so happy you're here. Listen, listeners, he is the founder and CEO of People G2. We're going to talk about what that organization does because he's been on the leading edge of remote work for years. In fact, People G2 is routinely ranked as one of the best places to work. And it actually, his company has been listed of one of Inc.'s 5,000 fastest growing companies five times. Woohoo! And as a leader, he speaks on leadership. His goal is to inspire audiences. And I know this because I've met Chris, and my business partner, Laura Neubauer, has known him. And we also know his business partner, Kim Shepherd. So, but he really talks with his audiences about straightforward delivery. He is insightful with candor. That's what I love. And of course, partly the reason we have him here is because of his humor. Chris, I know you love to just work with people and motivate them and inspire them. But first, let's talk about this your company, People G2, because you've been ahead of this curve about remote work way longer than most. So tell us about it.
Well, you mentioned my co-author, Kim Shepherd, and I think it's a good segue because she had a remote company that she started back in 2001. Well, it wasn't the same thing. She was a traditional company that converted to remote in 2001. Now, when the recession hit in 2008, 2009, I knew I had to change the company. Things were not working. I knew we weren't going to survive if we kept going the way we were going. It was that perfect time of like, well, the phone isn't ringing, so you might as well work on your business, right?
Absolutely.
It's like right now with the pandemic, I expect Disneyland and every amusement park to be perfectly clean. Everything that they never could have time to work on, they should have worked on now, right? And it was the same thing for me. Like, we're not very busy. Let's work on the business. And I decided we had to change the culture. I decided we had to change how we operated. What were the norms? How do we get things done? But one of the strategies that I had to employ to survive was to go remote. Now, I did this not for culture, not because it's the best way to work, which I do believe. I did it to save money and to not go out of business and to save my people and to keep their jobs. I did it for very monetary reasons to start. And 2 weeks into it, every employee had called me on their own without being asked to and said, this is the best thing we've ever done. Can we please keep going this way forever? I love remote work. I didn't know it. I didn't understand it. I love it. And I went, because we thought this might be temporary, right? We would just do that and then maybe come back later. And it was obvious that this gave us everything we were missing, eliminated everything we hated, right? And made work better. And then we had to get to work on, okay, now that we know we like it, we've got to really get good at it. And that's been the process really from 2009 till today. We're always constantly working on how to make our culture and remote work work for us.
Yeah. Well, you don't get on the best place to work list for nothing. I mean, that is tough, right? And you know, when we talk about heart and you have to be able to engage people differently. And how are you really doing that now that you've said, okay, this is how we're going to do business? And particularly now with the environment, how are you engaging folks?
So what's interesting is we had this guy come to us and say, hey, I'm doing my dissertation on remote work. We'd like to study you. And I went, okay, cool. Just don't, you know, he's like, is it okay if I talk to your people? Yeah, cool. I introduced them. And I said, just don't bother them too much, you know? And then he came back to me a year later and said, hey, I'd like to show you what I did. And I go, I'm sorry, what? Who are you? I'd forgotten all about it, right? My people are talking to this guy all the time. I've forgotten all about it. And he goes, I have some really interesting results that we found out. Your company follows the top tier model of what we saw from the best companies about remote work. And one of the interesting things is, if you have people working remotely, work-life balance is the most important category. The ability to work, and that's, let me translate that for you, ability to work flexibly, meaning I can wake up and I can do 2 hours of work. I can then wake my kids up, make them breakfast, take them to school, come back, work for another block of 4 hours. Maybe I go to my lunch, right? Then I go pick up my kids and then I work another block. It's not like you have to be at your desk at 9 a.m. and you can't leave until five, you know, with your 15-minute breaks and a 30, right? Like eliminating all of that and giving them that flexibility, right? It's okay to go downstairs and move the laundry over. It's okay to take the dog for a walk. No one's watching you. No one cares for that matter. As long as you are productive and you're getting the things done we expect, we don't care really how you get it done and where you get it done and why you get it done. So that part is really important. Whereas in a traditional office, professional satisfaction and personal satisfaction are really high on the list. And for remote workers, it's actually much lower on the list. It's still important, but they don't, their identity at work is not that I got to work on that big project and I got this thing done and my boss pulled me up in front of everyone and I got the big promotion, right? It's that I can like get my work done. I can do a great job. Everyone knows it, but like I can still take my kid to school. I can still go to the doctor's appointment. I don't have to take a whole day off.
Yeah.
Right. It's just, it's a whole different mix. And I think people are starting to see that, but not everyone's kids have gone back to school yet. So they haven't quite had the full benefits of remote work yet. They're still got their kids knocking on the door when they're on an important meeting and things like that. So yeah, we'll see. But yeah, it's a different dynamic about what they value, because you realize how much you get back when you're not driving 2 hours in a car. And you realize, you know, how much you get back if you can go volunteer in your kid's classroom for a few hours, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to ask permission. You don't have to, like, that's just silly, right? In my environment, my company. You know, I've had some of my old schoolers would like send me a message, Chris, I just want you to know I'm going to be gone. And I keep writing to them, I don't care. Just go.
Just do it.
Stop telling me where you're going. I don't care. But like they've been doing this for 40 years. It's ingrained. They have to tell their boss what's going to, if they're not going to be at their desk for 10 minutes. And I'm just like, ugh, you know.
Yeah, you know, but you've kind of shifted the mindset of how you lead people too, because there's a little bit of risk going on there by allowing your people to have some of this flexibility. I mean, what do you advise people?
So there's a couple of things. One, what you focus on, Matt, what you focus on is what grows. Mm-hmm. So if I focus on the fact that I trust them and I focus on their output, I focus on what the outcomes are and what I can measure from that perspective, and I don't focus at all on the other stuff. Are they sitting at their desk? What are they doing at 4:55 p.m. on a Friday? Like if I focus on that stuff, the bad stuff, that's going to grow. It's going to get worse. People start to, you know, it all just, but if I focus on, wow, this person did an amazing job. Here over the course of the week, we expected them to do X and instead they did Y. Wow. Celebrate that. That's amazing. And that's what's important. There are some compliance issues. There are some things you have to think about. Like it's possible they could go and work 100 hours this week and not tell you. And then if they're not an exempt, you know, salaried employee and under what, you know, whatever state you're in, they could come back to you and say, well, now you owe me the money. And you'd be like, well, I didn't authorize you to do that. Well, too bad, right? They did the work. So you do have to make sure that people aren't overworking. And this always surprises everyone. My biggest heartburn is that people overwork that they don't take their vacations, right? That they're not, they'll go and do work and not clock that, not, you know, write that stuff down because they care so much about their work. They want so deeply to help the company and the clients that they'll even sacrifice their own, their well-being to do that. And I, that's my job. So we talked about Kim earlier. She had this great saying that I have stolen and just made my own, which is if you're wired, you're fired. And so when people go on vacation, if you show up to a meeting and you're on vacation, you and I are going to have a talk. We got a problem, right? You can't let go.
Yeah.
We also go in and have them delete their entire inbox the day they come back, the morning they come back from vacation. And I don't mean like a day or two. I mean, if you're gone for a week or 10 days or something, a real vacation, your first meeting when you first come back is with your boss and they watch you delete all of your emails. And we ask them, put an out of office message that says, I'm not going to read your email. I'm gone. You can contact me if it's important. Re-email me on such and such a date and then I'll respond to you. And if you need other help, here's all the other people in the company you can go get help, right?
Yeah.
And it sets an expectation that we value that you are going to take the time you need to recharge. We value that you when you're on, you're on, and when you're off, right? And so constantly setting those boundaries with some, you know, fun terminology, but like reinforcing it.
Yeah.
And most importantly, that means I can't do that. As the CEO, I can't do that. So the one little asterisk I will say that we have added that has been very helpful, we do have salespeople that are working on really big deals. And it just so happens that sometimes the deal wants to close the week they're on vacation.
Of course.
Right?
Right.
And they've been working on this for a year. So we have the promise that if something happens, if we need them, we will call them on their cell phone, we will text them and bring them in if they want to, optional, if they want to, because you know, this could be a huge amount of their revenue for the year. This could be that making their, you know, their quota or whatever. So we have given that slight little, you know, in an emergency situation, we promise we'll call you if we really need you to be there, if it's going to impact your bottom line or whatever. But for most people, they have no problem. Once you set that expectation, then they go, okay, I'm not, my team's got it. They're going to cover it. I'm okay. No one expects me. And I found what we had, I know I'm talking forever here. Sorry.
It's great.
I found that 80% of my employees did not take their full vacation time for about 3 years in a row. And as soon as we put in that policy of eliminating all of their emails on day one, it went down to 10%.
Of course.
Because they didn't, it wasn't worth it.
Right.
It wasn't worth taking vacation if they had to come back and answer 1,000 emails and have a stack on their desk so big that they were now under what they'd rather just keep working.
Right.
And they would just, they would maybe do a Friday or a Monday here and there, but they weren't taking the block. And I wanted them to take the block because that's when they recharge. That's when they connect with their family. That's when they actually come up with a really great idea because their brain got to rest.
That's right.
You know, and while they're going down the water slide in whatever park, they go, oh, we should use this web browser instead of this one. You know, it's just some crazy idea for work. And they'll come back and share with us. So it's important to figure that out for your company.
Well, and I think, you know, this is truly incredible because I find so many leaders, they read all these books on how to be great leaders and how to implement and how to do all this, but they never actualize it. Yeah. And what you've actually done is you've said, look, I'm going to walk the walk. And I'm actually going to let people do that. And I think the email thing is incredible. Because even I'm like, I, if I'm out of the office for a day, you come back and you feel like you owe somebody something. And I've been pretty good about talking to my clients. I answer my emails 3 times a day, morning, in the middle of the day, and the afternoon. So I'll get to you, you know, but just having that pressure that you've allowed people to take it off. And you know, we talk about hustle and there was something that you said that I think resonated so well is about goals and focus. But I loved what you said. Basically, it's a hustle to do the work others are not willing to do to reach your goals. And it sounds like that's how you live, and you have that expectation for your staff. But tell us a little bit more about that. Like what does it mean for you to hustle?
Yeah, you know, I don't know how I say this without sounding really pompous and
you're good. Say it. We want to hear the true stuff. I mean, the raw stuff.
I have a lot of people that ask me, how do you get so much done? How do you do so many things? Yeah. And the answer is always two parts. One, I have a really good team. I have great people, and I know where I'm strong and I know where I'm weak. And anything I'm weak at, I outsource. I get rid of it because it drains me of energy. I don't get it done as well as somebody else does. You know, I have someone that does a lot of my social media posting. I still post some stuff, but like the whole like drain of consistently doing it all the time. So her and I come up, we meet once a week, we talk about what it's going to be, and she figures it out and she does all like the kind of crappy stuff that you have to do, right? To get it all done. So I've outsourced that, right? So you got to find good people that want to do that stuff, because there's a lot of parts of inside of a hustle of something you want to get done that you don't want to do. And so you avoid those things. You don't do those things. The second part is that I know I'm really terrible at time management and all of this other stuff. I have, you know, I'm ADD all over the place. I have a million good ideas. And so I use a thing called time boxing. So time boxing combines a couple different strategies that probably people have heard about. You've ever done like Franklin Covey or whatever, like rocks, stones, sand, or A, B, C, right? So I always did that. I would, okay, what are my A tasks? What's my B tasks? What's my C tasks? And I would identify them, but then I would just avoid my A tasks, right? I identified them, but then I wouldn't do them. But with time boxing, what you do is you look at your calendar. So you make you identify only three things a day that can be A or rocks, whatever terminology. Mm-hmm. And then you look at your calendar for the day because you have calls, you have things that have been already planned. And then you block out, you block on your actual calendar. I have my thing, I block it out, right? I'm going to do this thing during this time. And that is huge because that was the next connecting point to, I've identified what's important. But now I need to schedule when I'm going to do that thing. Because for me, if I've scheduled it, I'll do it.
Right.
Right. If I don't schedule it, then it's easy to pass it on. I'll do it tomorrow, do it tomorrow, do it tomorrow. I have this one sticky note of this thing I'm supposed to do, and it keeps moving from page to page to page because I don't want to do it and I haven't scheduled it. You know, it'll get there eventually. You know, and I think last is you have to just be willing to do more. I mean, this is kind of a little bit of the Gary Vaynerchuk type of thing. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to like do a lot of stuff that you're maybe you don't want to do. Not you don't want to do, but like more. You have to be able to willing to do more than what someone else is going to do. So if you know five people doing what you're doing, and you can identify they're probably spending X amount of hours a day on this, you got to do it more. Right, they're spending 5 hours a day on their website for their products. You got to do six. You got to do seven. Right. I mean, if you want to get ahead of them, you have to do more. It's not you can get better people, you can hire smarter people, you know, and yourself. You got to do more. And there's some combination in there that brings you into that hustle level. You know, we were in a pandemic, so what did I do? I went and wrote a book with Kim. Everybody else was like, not. I have so many people tell me how much regret they have. They didn't do more during the pandemic. They realized it was the perfect opportunity to do something new or do something different. Yeah. And instead they watched Netflix all day.
Right. Yeah. We find that a lot. And you know, our clients are, you know, cause we're doing, you know, we're building at Kaleidoscope Media Services. We build, you know, these digital online communities and we build e-learning courses. And I'll tell you, the people that are coming to us are the ones that just needed to hustle to get some stuff done. And they knew they could rewrite scripts, or they knew they could videotape themselves. They could learn all this during the pandemic. And you know, so I've known Kim Shepherd for some time. And I will tell you that talk about somebody that is so funny in life and on stage. I you have to have like this whole level of you that is comedic to be able to be hanging out with Kim and writing this book. How was that for you guys?
You know, so I wrote the first book, The Power of Company Culture. And when I was done, I told everyone I knew, everyone close to me, if I ever agree to write another book, please, please, please shoot me. Please poison me. Push me in front of a bus. Don't ever let me do this again. Yep, it was terrible. I hated it. I love the finished product was great. But right. I realized I was all alone doing it by myself. And that's not how I get anything done in my life. Everything I do is with a team, with a group of people. I'm collaborating. I have people to lean on who can lean on me, right? Where are we strong? Where are we weak? And here I was, I had to do everything. And it was hard. And like, I didn't grow up, like no one would have said, oh, Chris, he's going to grow up to be a writer. Oh, no. A speaker? Sure. A smartass? Sure. Right?
Right.
Writer was nothing many of my teachers would have given. But I did it, right? And I'm glad I did it. So the publisher kept coming back to me and saying, we really want you to write a book. And I kept saying, there's a finger on my hand I would like to show you. Let me, you know, which one am I going to get?
Which one?
And finally they said, you know, but you really love remote work. Are you? And they got me with remote work. Oh, okay, you want me to write about remote work. Okay. Yeah. All right. And I go, you know what? I should do this with Kim. So I called Kim up and I said, hey, let's go to lunch. And we were in Laguna. And I said, hey, you want to write a book? And typical Kim. Yeah, that sounds like fun. Cool, let's do it. Sign me up. You know, hardly any details, whatever. You know, we figured it out. Yeah. And so I realized it was such a delight to write with her. So our process was, once we started writing, it was we met on Monday and we argued about everything that we had already kind of planned out. Tuesday, we filled in any gaps and kind of cleaned it all up. And then Wednesday, we just sat and talked and talked and talked and recorded it. And then we turned that into this written text, right? We turned it into our chapters. The one area that I had to really work with Kim on was that I had learned this lesson the hard way with my first book, was that you really have to plan it out. You really have to map and map and map. And so her and I started at her in her condo or her house with sticky notes. What's the big concepts we want to cover? What are the chapters? Okay, big concept. If you think of it like an extra large t-shirt, double extra large t-shirt, we're putting up all the double extra large t-shirts. Now, can we turn that t-shirt into two extra larges? Mm-hmm. Can we turn those extra large t-shirts into four larges and then eight medium? How do we keep getting more and more and more granular down to the smaller points and then rearrange? Because you realize, well, you're going to talk about that same thing over here and over here. So should those things be in the same chapter? And she kept telling me along the way, you know, I think this weekend I'm going to start writing. And I kept saying, no, we are nowhere near ready to write. And when we finally got down to the end, she went, oh. Because then it was like, all we have to do is argue about, we had to fill in the stories. We basically had to just, it was like, I don't know, creating 100 skeletons and like, okay, now it's time to put clothes on them, right? Yeah. And that was the easy part for us because we could tell our stories and be funny and whatever. But we knew exactly what each thing was and that made it so much easier to do. And it was a lot of fun because Kim and I have done so many things together, but we've never collaborated that way together.
Yeah.
We've been in the same CEO groups. We've been on the same charity boards. We've been around, but never like, let's create something together. And so that experience was just so much fun. I hopefully her and I will maybe do it again.
Well, I've had the pleasure of having a pre-read of the book called Remote Work by you and Kim Shepherd. And I want people to know, in a minute I'm going to ask you how do we get a hold of it because I know it's launching in May. I think what really resonated with me is the stories that you told, the real stuff. It's not written in a textbook form. It's written very much about true stuff that you and Kim have done and then how to execute with nice bullet points. So I'm excited to get the copy and give it to some folks that I know. But can you tell our listeners, how do they get your book?
Yeah, and I think you brought up a good point earlier about, you know, people read leadership books and then like, how do you actually put it into place? And I think there's a lot of responsibility that authors have to not just give people these superfluous big things like you should be a better listener.
That's great. Yeah.
Duh. Okay. But how do I be a better listener? Right. Like how to, or, and then a sub point, how do you actually make people feel heard? Right. It's one thing to listen. How do they know that you actually heard them? Right.
So we
tried to break this down in such a way that it was anybody at any leadership level could take lessons, take our stories, and not just our stories, Cornerstone On Demand, AMN Healthcare, Girls Inc., the United States Marine Corps. I mean, we brought in people from these organizations who gave us their remote specific stories and said, this is how we do it. This is what we learn. This is what we realize we have to do going forward. So if people are interested, there's a couple ways. If you're watching this program before May 25th, you can go to chrisdyer.com/remote-work-promo, and that will get you a significantly less expensive copy of the book if you're willing to buy 10 or more. And the reason you would buy 10 or more, besides to give them to your team, to share them with people you think might want to have this, there are 50 companies that do work inside of the remote space that are giving away their services for free or significantly discounted if you buy 10 or more books. So you buy 10 books, you're going to get all your money back by all the free stuff that they're going to give you. Everything from ergonomic guides to marketing training to diversity and inclusion training to leadership training. Wow. I mean, anything you can think of, people are giving away their best stuff, their coolest stuff. And in some regards, if they can't get away, they're giving it to you significantly discounted. And so just because they know if you read the book and you do the stuff and we're talking about in the book, you're going to be successful with remote work. And if you're successful with remote work, you know, they know you're going to need their services eventually. And you're going to come back to them because it's all connected, right? You can't just do one thing and sit still in an organization. Now, if it's after May 25th, well, go to Amazon or wherever you buy your books online and you can grab as many copies, one or 1,000, whatever you want to do.
Perfect.
But yeah.
Well, we're going to Kaleidoscope. Laura, my business partner, doesn't know it yet, but we're buying 10 copies because we have some folks that we want to send them to. And like nice. I said, I've got the pre-read, so I'm fortunate. I know what's in it, and you're going to love it. So pick up the remote work, and we'll have it in the show notes so everybody knows how to get a hold of you. And as we're coming to a conclusion here, Chris, what's your last piece of advice that you want to give folks today?
Last piece of advice besides buying the book. No, I'm just
besides
kidding.
Buying the book.
we built up Kim and I, Kim so much in this. I did want to mention that if you're local and you buy 250 books, we're going to take you on a helicopter ride to Catalina. Or if you buy 500 books, we'll pay for you to fly anywhere from the United States to Laguna Beach, hang out with us, drive in a Bentley, do all kinds of fun stuff. So we have like some crazy prizes if you're that kind of person that wants to buy a lot of books. So
see, okay, I told everybody, Chris Dyer and Kim Shepherd are a hoot. I'm telling you, you guys should do it because you will have fun. If you buy 500 books and get to spend the day with these two, your life will never be the same.
No, good or bad, never be the same. No.
Right? Because there's probably going to be a little bit of getting in trouble there on that day too. So,
but to answer your question, there's a couple of different ones that I've used and some of you asked me this, but I think the one that maybe resonates with what we've been talking about today is think about if just half the amount of TV, half the amount of TikTok, half the amount of social media, half the amount of the crap that you do every day that you didn't do, but instead you used on something you thought was valuable to help you get better. Learning a new, I mean, I have cut down my social media in the last 4 months in half just so I can learn Spanish. Right. So my phone will tell me how much I'm doing on each app. And I'm like, okay, well, if I cut that down in half, what could I do with it instead? Right. Could I read more books? Could I learn a language? Could I start a new business? Could I, learn something that would be valuable for me to get that next promotion or that next thing? There is plenty of space in your life to add in just enough. And that's how we get better. You don't ever go from, I don't know if any of you guys daydream about like, what if I could be the best guitar player ever? Or what if I could be the best speaker ever? What if I could be be on the PGA and be a golfer? Oh, great. But you're not going to go from sitting on your couch to that end goal. It's going to be hundreds and thousands of tiny little interactions of you getting better and working on it on a consistent basis. How do you get 1% better all the time to eventually you're going to get to a point and realize this is an attainable dream, or I've learned something new, I'm better for it, it's great. Maybe I'm not going to be on the PGA, but I'm a really good golfer now and I can go out with my friends and it's a great hobby and I enjoy it, right? Whatever that is, but there is space. So the advice is there is space in your life to get better and to change things for yourself. If you want to do it, you just have to eliminate some of the crap or eliminate some of the people in your life that you don't, that are causing you stress and anxiety, that are, you know, wasting your time or whatever. And you can do it. And that has been fundamental for me to read more books and to do more things and to learn more things so I could translate into something else. I think that's kind of a part of that hustle model that you talked about.
Yep. Absolutely. Oh, Chris, thank you so much. You have given our listeners so much to think about. And I just to shift the way they're thinking and shift the way they're doing work. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
If you like this episode, please subscribe, like us, share with your friends, and leave us a review. Continue to dream higher. Until next time. Are you a professional looking to take your business to the next level? If the answer is yes, then I want you to go to kaleidoscopemediaservices.com. Check it out. And if you feel you are ready, then set up a time to talk to me and my co-founder, Laura Neubauer. I'm your host, Dr. T. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to leave us a review and share this podcast with your friends.